Alex gets into one right center field and deep. That's a way back. And Alex Gordon hits his first home run of 2020.
There's things we got to clean up, things we have to get better at. But there's also some things that we're doing well. When we're doing well, we need to make sure we're pointing those out also. But the bottom line is we play this game for W's. And right now they're hard to come by. A couple hits away from turning a number of those losses to wins. So with that being said, we got to get this turned around. And, you know, you win a few games in a row and you're right back where everybody's talking about being in the middle of this thing. So that's where this team should be right now. And I plan on us still getting there.
All right, it's Mike Matheny, the manager of the Kansas City Royals, as the Royals come home. No fans to support them, but fans have been disappointed anyway. Royals get swept by the White Sox. The Royals are now 3-7. Yesterday, Jacob Junis came back off the IL, pitched all right, had a wild play where it was a line drive off his foot. It was caught by Franco at third, and they throw back the first for the 1-5-3 odd double play. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Very unique and weird. But didn't help the Royals win. It was 2-2 in the 7-run seventh, and the Royals bullpen imploded, and the White Sox go on to win, and the Royals get swept by the White Sox. 9-2 was the final yesterday, and Chris Bubik made his debut in the home opener for the Royals, and kind of was a little amped up, and well, didn't have his best performance, but it's, you know, early in his career, obviously, his first start. Brady Singer was pretty solid. His second major league start, and that was, we talked about that last Friday. So anyway, the Royals got some young youth that's coming up, and it all revolves around the starting pitching because they don't have a lot of it right now. Danny Duffy on the hill for the boys in blue tonight against the Cubs, who are off to a nice start. The Cubs are 7-2, and the Royals, of course, are 3-7. But here's the thing, the Royals play every single day. They don't have an off day, and I've always kind of wondered about this with Major League Baseball players is, like, if you're a team and you struggle, you know, you really don't have practices. Like, we have practices in K-18 Pee-wee or whatever, and whereas there they go through the BP and they shag fly balls and this and that. And, of course, I'm maybe not privy to this, but I don't see, like, everybody out there on the field going over situations, you know, mm-hmm. things like that, like we do at the younger level, which you would hope these guys would all understand that. But how do you make those improvements when you're struggling? And it has to be adjustments with your pitchers and your pitching coaches. It has to be adjustments with your hitters and your hitting coaches. And then sometimes you got to wake some guys up. You move them down in the order. You bench them, whatever the case may be. But we knew all along starting pitching is going to be a problem for the Royals, and it is. But the offense has been a problem as well. And the offense, yes, they only mustered 2 runs. And Hunter Dozier coming back would certainly help the cause for the Royals. But they're off to their typical slow start. They are 3-7, and in a season of 60 games, the Royals may be already pressing. Really, the only bright spots, I would say, is Brady Singer. Has been pretty decent for his first 2 starts, and Whit Merrifield.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after that, I don't know what's
not
really
a lot of
positive.
Consistency.
No.
You know, Franco's had some good things going, right. But not much consistency at all.
Strike out a lot.
Yeah.
Don't walk a lot. Strike out a lot. Not a good combination. So the Royals will try to get one against the Cubs and Danny Duffy on the hill, and he's kind of a microcosm of what the Royals are. Duffy will be great for 3-4 innings, and then just there's that bad inning.
Yeah.
Not, it just seems like second or third time through the order, if he gets that far, then people figure him out. Big story in baseball, of course, is COVID-19. It continues to be. Yes, I know we couldn't make it through a show without bringing up COVID-19, but it is what it is. And the Cardinals now, they've had an outbreak, and more positive test results expected per report from CBSSports.com. They're the second team. Of course, the Marlins are the first to deal with these positive tests. The Cardinals have at least 6 positive tests among their traveling party, 3 from players. Their 3-game series with the Brewers was postponed. There were 6 Major League Baseball teams that were affected by and not even playing, which is 20% of your Major League franchises, mm-hmm. 6 of 30. So that's not good. Marlins suppose they're going to be back in action tomorrow night with what type of team, I don't know. Lorenzo Cain, who's a Brewer now, a very important part of the Brewers team that certainly has the potential to make a run in the playoffs, make the playoffs. He opted out, and I think this was the last straw once the Cardinal thing happened because the Brewers are supposed to play the Cardinals. Yoandis Cespedes decided to opt out but didn't really tell anybody. That was a big story yesterday, and they were worried about maybe, you know, something bad happened to him, but he just packed up everything and left and said, I'm done, I'm out. And he was the the first game of the year, the Mets won. Cespedes hit the game-winning homer, and it was the how was that explained? I heard that the other day, where, you know, it was the DH. First time the DH was used in a regular season game that day or whatever, and that was the first home run or game-winning homer by a DH in the National League or something like that. And Cespedes had it, and now he's opting out.
Yeah.
So all kinds of firsts here and there when it comes to Major League Baseball in this shortened season. And whether or not we get through it, I don't know. I still don't know how they're going to with all the travel, but we shall see. There's a story right now, and it's becoming a bigger story by the minute. And we'll try to address it the best that we can because I'm still gathering some information on it. A group of Pac-12 football players published a list of demands on the Players Tribune that they want met. They want those demands met ahead of the 2020 season. And if not, if those demands are not met, the players are threatening to opt out of participating in fall camp and playing in games. The list of demands ranges from ensuring players' safety as they're being asked to take the field during the COVID-19 pandemic to an equitable share in revenue generated by college football and ending racial injustice in college sports and society. Hashtag, we are united in our commitment to secure a fair treatment for college athletes. Due to COVID-19 and other serious concerns, we will opt out of Pac-12 football fall camp and game participation unless the following demands are guaranteed in writing by our conference to protect and benefit both scholarship athletes and walk-ons. Health and safety precautions is one of those, protecting all sports, not just football. The players want all sports to be protected to accomplish this goal. They want schools to eliminate excessive expenditures. To do this, they want Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott, administrators and coaches to voluntarily and drastically reduce excessive pay while ending performance and academic bonuses. They also want schools to end lavish facility expenditures and use endowment funds to preserve all sports. The players specifically cited Stanford's $27.7 billion endowment with a B, and yet they cut, what was it, 9 sports? Racial injustice is another focal point. The players want the Pac-12 to form a permanent civic engagement task force made up of their leaders, experts of their choice, and university and conference administrators to address outstanding issues such as racial injustice in college sports and society. Medical coverage and expenses, of course, tied with COVID-19. They want to be healthy, and that's part of the factor. And the players also want fair market pay, rights and freedom summarized by the following 6 demands. I'll give you just a few. Distribute 50% of each sport's total conference revenue evenly among athletes in their respective sports. So pay your athletes is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
2, 6-year athletic scholarships to foster undergraduate and graduate degree completion. 3, elimination of all policies and practices restricting and deterring our freedom of speech, our ability to fully participate in charitable work, and our freedom to participate in campus activities outside of mandatory athletics participation. 4, ability of players of all sports to transfer one time without punishment. So you can just transfer whenever you want, one time, without punishment. And 5, ability to compete eligibility after participating in a pro draft. They could still, you know, go undrafted, come back, so forth and so on. And then 6, due process rights. So that was CBS Sports released that. I believe that was last night or yesterday. Today, there's more information. This is coming from Deadspin. According to John Woods Jr. has been in his son's shoes. He played on the Missouri basketball team under Norm Stewart back in 1999. His son, Cassidy, plays wide receiver, okay, for Washington State, for their head coach, Nick Rolovich, who is in his first year as the head coach of Washington State. Cassidy Woods is a redshirt sophomore. He went to Rolovich, his head coach, over the weekend to tell him he was opting out of playing college football because he didn't feel safe. According to John Woods, the dad of the player, he said that his son told the coach, "I don't have sickle cell anemia. I have the sickle cell trait. I have to stay healthy, and I can't take any risk with anything else that flares up with this pandemic." The head football coach at Washington State said that was fine, but also asked him if he was part of the unity movement, referring to the coalition of Pac-12 athletes, who I just explained to you, their demands. And Cassidy responded with, "Yes, I am." And the head coach responded, and I quote, "Well, we have a problem. If you're part of the movement, we don't want to send mixed messages to the football program, so come in, clean out your locker. You're still on scholarship for this year." That's according to the dad. Washington State has quite clearly similarly rejected the players' demands. It remains to see if other Pac-12 teams will follow suit. So you got the players basically making their voice heard, which they have the right to do that. And you've got the schools that can say, or the programs themselves within the schools to say, listen, that's great, but we're not gonna entertain it. So if you're gonna, we'll call your bluff. If you ain't gonna play, you ain't gonna play. We'll go with whoever's gonna play. And I think that's basically what we've got here.
Listen, that list of demands,
that's pretty,
is, has to be the approach that universities take.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Clean out your locker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we'll keep your scholarship because you're on that for this year already.
There's no way you can meet all those demands before they start football.
No, not before you start football. Never for some of them.
Probably. Yeah.
They're not going to distribute 50% of their revenue to players.
No way.
That's not a Pac-12 decision anyway.
No, it's not.
That's an NCAA decision.
Mm-hmm.
Pac-12 can't just break off and say, oh, yeah, we're going to give you 50% of our revenue as income for you.
Right.
Not possible. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. The NCAA has to approve that. And you think you're getting the NCAA to approve that before you want to start 2020 season?
Yeah.
No.
You think you're going to get 6-year athletic scholarships?
No, not at all. No. No.
That's a pipe dream.
Look, Stanford's not going to spend money out of their endowment to cover football when they can get money coming in for other ways to cover football.
Exactly.
Are you going to tell corporate sponsors to stop sponsoring stuff? Basically, that's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff, like, I know you can give that money to somebody else is what they're saying, mm-hmm. but a lot of demands on there that I think people just don't want to play football because of the health risk. So they came out with this list of demands.
Yeah, that's a good way to read into it.
That's how I feel about it.
Because to me, really, the main thing they should be, and I'm with them up to that, through that point, health and safety precautions. I'm totally with them. I'm like, you are amateurs. You're not. And basically what they're saying is, okay, if we don't really have, we don't have a players union. You know, obviously the NFL does. So we don't have a union to represent us. And so the only way we're going to protect ourselves is have these demands. And so basically we're saying, we're going to, if you want us to play, we want all of this stuff to happen. And yeah, do they figure they're going to get all of it? Surely they don't. But they're making a statement here that we have a voice, even though we don't have a union, and we are Pac-12 players of United. So we're going to use racial injustice as a cause. And we need health and safety, which is certainly understandable the way things are now. And this is our way, I think, of getting people's attention. And I think it's working because it's obviously a national story now.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. I mean, if you're a football coach, and if you're the university, I mean, unless everybody's just going to not play ball, which if they're not going to play ball, then you know what? It might not be the end of the world anyway for the Pac-12 because there's no guarantee we're going to have a season anyway on top of it all. So are you going to bend over backwards not knowing you're going to have any type of season or not, you know? So anyway, somebody texted me something. What about their scholarship? If they're going to school on a football scholarship and decide not to play, then they should be done with school too. Well, if they're on scholarship, I mean, it's a football scholarship. But you don't play football. I mean, you could see where that could be stripped from you. But the football coach said in this situation that you keep your scholarship. So
yeah,
they're allowing you to keep your scholarships, and you can be in this movement all you want, and you can say we're not going to play this or that until this happens, our demands are met. But the bottom line is, like I said, university or the football program or whoever can say, listen, this isn't happening, so do what you got to do, but clean out your locker.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. I get where the players are coming from, and I totally get the other side of it. It's like, dude, I'm a football coach. I mean, my job is to get you guys together to play, and if you guys have all these other, you know, agendas that you're working on, that's going to send mixed messages to my guys here that want to be a part of this, and I can't afford you to be a part of it, and then all of a sudden jump because you have a cause, which it's great you have a cause, but I can't let that affect my football team because I'm paid to what? Coach my football team.
Coach my football team, exactly. Yeah. Well, it's a larger scale of what we saw with the K-State football team. Right?
Absolutely.
It's a different,
much
it's a different,
more detailed. That goes a
more
lot
demands,
further.
different right. things, but it's a larger scale, and it's the same concept of at some point you're gonna have to call their bluff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, at some point, as in what happened at K-State, you're gonna have to let them know we cannot kick this kid out of school.
Mm-hmm.
So figure out what you want to do from there. Okay, we'll stand up for you. We'll fight for you as much as we can,
mm-hmm.
and then just figure it out from there. And this is going to be the same thing. I mean, this is the list to start. Some of these kids are going to opt out. They're not going to play because of health
mm-hmm.
and safety concerns. But at the end of the day, they're going to realize that the Pac-12 can't do most of these things they're asking
mm-hmm.
in less than a month.
Right.
So, I mean, it just is what it is. I call their bluff and say, hey, you really want to play, you can play. If you don't, you don't. If you don't want to play, you don't want to play.
Right.
That's what it comes down to in the end.
Well, you know, we've said this for a long time. I know Jay Billis is all for it, but and I understand where he's coming from. But once you open up the pay for play, and once you open it up for athletes to get paid at any level, any amount of money, the Pandora's box is open, and you're never going to put it back.
No.
And I understand players are, they are taking advantage of, athletes are, and all these people make a ton of money off of them. Although, please realize they are getting a free education in our scholarship, which is worth $100,000 to $200,000 in some schools, a lot more than that, for a four-year degree, or even you've got to go 5 years, wherever it is. So it is worth something. I know athletes, I've said this before, they all their meals are taken care of when they travel. They don't have to pay for their plane tickets, their train tickets, their bus tickets. They stay in the nice hotels. Trust me, I know this firsthand. So they you know, they get the gear, the swag, you know, the warm-up stuff. They get to keep it. We know of a local person when he got done, you know, Austin Budke. He was, you know, selling some of his K-State stuff because he didn't need it anymore.
Yeah.
And he was allowed to do that and make a few bucks on a garage sale.
Now they have this player's trunk online where players can go sell all their stuff whenever they want and make the profits on it.
Right, but they didn't have to buy any of that stuff. Yeah. And so, listen, I know players put in a lot of stuff, but a lot of time, and I know that there's a lot of money generated off of college athletics, and I get where the players are coming from. I totally do. I just don't know how in the world you have college athletics by paying people. I mean, I know it's happening illegally now with certain players. I get that. But that's, I don't know what the percentage is. It's the star athletes that are getting paid.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, there might be some other guys that get $100 here and there or whatever. But right, this is interesting here. It's there's been a study there's a story that came out by a Deadspin writer, how the NCAA's empire robs predominantly black athletes of billions in generational wealth. Drexel University's Ellen Starkowski explained that $10 billion was generated by college athletes in football and basketball, which is then transferred to predominantly white coaches and administrators. Under a 50%, 47% revenue split, college football players would earn almost $1 million after 4 years, if you break all that down under that type of split. By the way, Washington State, some sources said they deny that any players have been cut. According to John Woods, four other scholarship players were released from the team, as well as several walk-on players. So you got conflicting stories, obviously. But let's go back to the money thing. Where do you draw the line? Who gets what? If you are a volleyball player, if you are a member of the rowing team, if you're a tennis player, if you're a golfer, even a wrestler, really any sport besides football and men's basketball, that'd be the easiest way to say it, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Any sport besides football and men's basketball, and I don't think there's many women's basketball players that are going to get paid a lot of money to play that brings a whole bunch of people in the seats, but maybe. But after football, men's basketball, what athletes are going to be paid? Because once you pay any scholarship athlete, if you're on the rugby team, shouldn't you get a stipend? Shouldn't you get paid? I mean, where does it end? Oh, well, football brings in 80% of the athletic budget, so they get 80% of the money. You know, 80% of the money that's paid out to athletes, whatever fund they want to call it, a pay-for-play fund, whatever you want to call it, is 80% of that money staying with football because football funds 80% of the athletic programs, and then programs that lose money, which is virtually about every other program besides men's basketball. Mark Johnson, the voice of Colorado Buffaloes from the Pac-12, was with us a couple weeks ago on the show, and he said, listen, every sports program at these major universities loses money except football, which makes all the money, and everybody, he said, every sport that has players that are on scholarship of these other sports should send a thank you notice, he said, I'm paraphrasing, to the athletic director thanking them for having a football program. Because without football, and that's why you want to have football so badly now during COVID, is because it pays for almost everything. There are men's basketball programs that do make money. but not nearly to the level of football does. But there are some, there's some men's programs that don't make money either, by the way. And there are some lower level, you know, schools, and I say lower level, D2, D3, whatever, that their football programs siphon, they're bleeding money, and their football programs actually are better off not having football. But in Division I, in the Power Five conferences, football is what keeps everything afloat. So you're telling me you're going to distribute money evenly to every single athlete on campus under scholarship, so football players can get paid the same as somebody on the rowing team or the on the volleyball team or on the track and field team or soccer team that doesn't make your university any money? They're going to get paid the same amount? How do you decide who gets paid what? Is my point.
Yeah. And that's what I've talked about the whole time. It's like there's a professional football league for a reason, is what I've always felt. And I know it's not like the NBA where you can get there as quick as they can to do that in football. I just, what do you do? Like, what is a quarter, like, let's say Cam Newton, I'll just use him an example because he got paid, right? No, Cam Newton's coming out of high school or junior college, whatever.
Right.
You know, and he's trying to find what school he wants to go. Well, let's just say high school because he went to Florida out of high school.
Right.
Let's say Cam Newton's coming out of high school and Daddy Cam or Cam, they want this amount of money. What do they do when they're recruited? Do they start negotiating contracts with colleges? Once you open this box is what I'm saying.
Right, and where do you think players are going to probably go?
The top quarterback
in the
country.
Usually, right?
Yeah. Are you going to start negotiating? And so USC's going to give them this. Alabama's going to give them this.
Right.
Okay, their boosters are ready to pay for the best quarterback in the country,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's no rule against it.
Right. So it's open season.
And so I just, what do you, it's just, it's not, is it a, and here's another thing, is it a one-time payment?
Yeah.
You go in there, you say, hey, give me $2 million for the whole
when
4 years.
When I sign my letter of intent.
But what if you leave after 3 years?
Yeah, what if you transfer? You have to pay the money back?
We're going to have to divide this up like an NFL contract and say we're going to pay you this year, okay, this.
And let me.
Well, how do you do it?
Well, no, like, I don't know how you do it. And let me, I mean, it's just like pro sports. I mean, just think about it. That's what it becomes because we've talked about it before. Some people think coaches get paid too much money. Nick Saban gets paid, what is it, $7, $8 million a year to be the head coach of the Alabama football team. And people just go, oh, my God, that's unbelievable. It's horrible. He's getting paid all this money. That's insane for a coach. Or Bill Self gets $3.5 million to coach basketball, whatever it is. That's just a blasphemy. That's just a ton of money. That's ridiculous how much money these coaches are making. But here's the thing. Bill Self's worth much more than $3.5 million. Nick Saban's worth way more than $7 or $8 million. Because when Alabama and Kansas are always at the top trying to win a national championship, and they get all these, you know, they're on Big Monday and the TV deals and the merchandise sales and everything else, they're a brand. KU basketball is a brand. Football isn't, of course. KU basketball is a brand. Alabama football is a brand. I use those two as examples, one kind of local and one that's national. Trust me, Nick Saban brings in more than $8 million to the university by being their coach and being in the playoff every single year and winning the SEC almost every single year. Trust me, Bill Self makes more than $3.5 million to the University of Kansas when they're winning the Big 12 almost every single year and vying for national championships or, you know, getting number one seeds in the NCAA tournament. So let me connect the dots. So in football, we've established, and then there's the blue bloods in basketball. That's pretty much your programs that make a lot of money. So let's just stick with football. Keep it in football. Excuse me. So Nick Saban is worth $7 or $8 million, and nobody, you know, bats an eye in Alabama because they know you can pay him $25 million. He's still going to make you a lot more because he's always going to have that team getting great recruiting classes, and they're always going to be right there, top four or five team almost every single week of the season, and they'll almost always be in the playoff discussion, if not a favorite to win it all every single year. And that makes the SEC a ton of money. It makes Alabama money. And everybody's happy, right?
Yes.
Okay, so let's go now down one peg. You've got a coach. Now you've got the greatest, the number one recruit in all of America. He is a lights-out quarterback. Let's just go Cam Newton. Cam Newton is the best quarterback in the country. Junior college quarterback. We can just do this. The best high school quarterback graduating, number one recruit, and there's also the best junior college quarterback. Okay, that's going to, you know, he has his 2 years, he's out of the way, he's going to go. How do you control that? Because I'm going to tell you right now, if you want to use Cam Newton as an example, well, Patrick Mahomes would be an example too, but let's just go Cam Newton. Alabama is going to be bidding high on his services.
Mm-hmm.
Texas is going to be bidding high on his services. Oklahoma will be bidding on his services. LSU will be bidding on his services. And so let's see Cam Newton. They're like, okay, and there's no limit to what he can get. Because I don't know how you put a cap on it, but whatever. So he gets a number that he likes. He goes out his freshman year, and he absolutely takes the country by storm. He is legit. He's a Heisman Trophy candidate, and his team wins the national championship his freshman year. He's not going pro because he can't, not yet.
Mm-hmm.
So now he comes back, but he decides, you know what? I'm not coming back. Look how much money I made you.
Yeah.
You paid me $2 million, but I made you a ton of money because you're national champions. And without me, you're not even close to as good as with me. So I want more, or I want a new deal. It's no different than professional athletes renegotiating after a great year.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different. It's a coach using leverage going, hey, I got another offer on the table for somebody else. I really like it here. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Give me a raise, and I'll stay. But if you don't, I'm going to leave. And so you don't want to lose that person. How's that going to be any different in college sports? College sports is going to be like pro sports from that standpoint. So then the rich are going to get richer, because we see that without salary caps in sports, right? We've seen with the Yankees through the years and other teams. And there's got to be a cap. There's got to be a limit. Who's going to police that limit in college sports? Okay? And so you've got a quarterback that's great. Now, if you have something that they're talking about here with you can transfer once without being punished, well, now I'm a free agent, which is no different than pro.
Yeah.
So if Cam Newton's a stud at Alabama and an Auburn comes in and says, we'll give you twice as much money and you can freely transfer once without punishment, Cam Newton's going to be like, okay, I change in teams.
Yeah.
Now here's another thing. Does he have to be eligible? I would hope he'd have to be eligible and pass his grades and get people to take his test for him, whatever is going to happen. But what happens if he's not eligible? Does he lose all his money? I mean, there's so many things to this thing. We're just touching the tip of the iceberg here.
Yeah.
I don't know how the NCAA can't police itself now.
How
in the world is it
going to
police people that are paying if it's not against the rules and you say there's a cap? Okay, no player can make more than $5,000, or it's going to be endorsement deals only. Well, boosters are still going to pay. We know this. I mean, where do you draw the line? I just a gigantic Pandora's box, and I get where the players are coming from. Tons of people are making tons of money off of us. But let's not forget, you're not leaving empty-handed. You get an absolute free education if you're on scholarship. That is worth a lot. And it should be worth even more if you actually turn that education, diploma, or degree into something good in your real life, because not everybody that plays college sports is going to go on to be pros. So I'm in the middle on this. I hate to be on the fence on things, but I understand where the players are coming from. And I do understand where black athletes are coming from, because they're predominantly the main ones that are making money for these universities. And who are their presidents? Mostly white presidents, white chancellors, white people. I get the connection, and I see where they connect the dots. But at the same time, it is a business. And the athletes, in order for them to get something accomplished, they have to be unified. They have to work together to reach a common goal. Is there anything wrong with what they're doing right now in the Pac-12? No. They can ask for the snar and the moons and everything. That doesn't mean they're going to get it. And then when they don't get it, then what are they going to do? Are they going to go back to, okay, we'll stick with the status quo? Or are they going to demand at least one thing gets changed before they agree to play ball? And if you open up the, as they say, 50% of the revenue goes back to the players, then your college athletics is dead, because then it's pro. That's pro athletics, folks. That's called revenue sharing. We're splitting that. What do you think happens in the NFL? The NFL, player association in NFL, it's a 50-50 or 51-49 split. That's what college players right there in the Pac-12 are saying.
Mm-hmm.
How is that any different?
No.
It isn't. And thus, it's not even college sports anymore. It's a professional thing. And you could argue we're already down that road, because lots of players do get paid, and they're not supposed to be getting paid, or they get all these lavish perks, or mama gets a house and a car, even though she's not supposed to, or daddy gets a job. Some mysteriously, this dad that's not qualified to have a job gets a $100,000 job at a local bank. Doing what? I don't know. It's happened before, by the way. So I just don't know what you do. I really don't. And I think this push for the pay for play, and states are doing this and that, Jay Billis has been pushing for it, I think you're going to, at the end of the day, regret it. I think you're going to have a whole different landscape of sports, and I think it's going to be a free-for-all. And you know who's going to benefit from the free-for-all? It's not going to be Kansas State. It's not going to be Oklahoma State. It's not going to be Iowa State. It's not, I mean, probably not even going to be Nebraska. It's going to be, your rich are going to get richer. If there's, it's going to be the wild, wild west. If there's no rules, and here's the thing, rules are great. People say, well, you just make a rule. Well, that's super great. But if there's no enforcement, nothing happens. Listen, if you didn't have cops on the roads pulling you over for speeding, do you think people would follow the speed limit?
No.
Why do you think people don't? Why do you think people wear, like, there's places where you're supposed to wear a mask. You can get fined. But if people don't enforce it, people are going to do whatever the heck they want to do. It's no different here.
No, it's a mess just when you start talking about pay for play in college sports, and you just, all these things start going through your mind, and it's like, how do you do it?
You're talking about equality.
And
one sport gets all the money, guess where everybody else can be starting a rant?
Yeah.
All the other sports are going to get together. Yeah. Where's our money?
Yeah, we need money.
We're important, too. Yeah,
and it's just, most of it's not feasible, just under the model that you have. And I just, maybe Texas could get themselves back in football if they could start paying people.
Yeah, maybe.
They're probably, well, in 2019, they had, because I was looking up revenue, you know, how much, because when you're talking about how much Nick Saban gets paid, I wonder how much Alabama made or had revenue, not profit, but revenue. They had $164 million revenue in 2019, Alabama did. Texas at $223.9 million. They're still making just all this money. If they could use that to pay for players.
Yeah, right, right.
Maybe Texas would be back, well, and they'd be the dominant force. They would be.
They're already.
Honestly, they would be without question, the dominant force in the Big 12 and probably right behind Alabama nationally.
And you bring up these numbers, and that's a great example, because what you have right there, in essence, is basically payrolls. Because in Major League Baseball, hey, the Yankees can spend $200 million. Before there was luxury taxes and everything else and no salary cap, and there's still no salary cap in baseball, by the way, you could spend whatever you wanted. Why do you think the Royals always were horrible? Because they didn't have the money. The Yankees had the big TV deal. The Yankees could do whatever the heck they want. The big market teams did what? They got the stars. The rich got richer. And then eventually things got even out a little bit when there's a luxury tax. And then revenue sharing. And the small owners got together, and David Glass was one of those, and that created a little bit more of an equal playing field, at least a lot fairer than it used to be. Yeah. Well, how are you going to make it an even playing field when Texas has $223 million revenues? Now, we don't know what their gross profit is, but $223 million at their disposal, and I don't know what K-State's is. Let's say it's half of that, $108 million, and Alabama's got whatever you said it was, $200 million. Well, clearly, those programs are going to have more money to throw at the big recruits, and thus what happens? You're going to have to settle for, just like in pro sports, you're going to have to settle for the two- or three-star recruit and pay them a little bit of money, but you ain't going to be able to go after those four- or five-star recruits, just like you ain't going to be able to go after those big-time free agents like Alex Rodriguez back in the day, you know? Oh, you're going to have to settle for, and in a way, that's kind of what's already happening, though. Let's be honest. I was talking about this with somebody yesterday in Bill Snyder's philosophy, and he was right. K-State didn't go after four- and five-star recruits. K-State, the reason they became so good in football wasn't because of all the four- or five-star recruits. They knew they weren't going to get those guys. So instead of wasting their time going after a four- and five-star recruits that Alabama and LSU and Texas of the world and Oklahoma's were going to get, they focused on two- or three-stars, and they knew that these are guys that fit their program, and they coached them up. Well, that's kind of the same thing that you would be faced if it was a pay-for-play situation in college athletics, wouldn't it? Texas would go out and get the big-time players. Yeah. Alabama would get the big-time players. And then KU and K-State, from a football standpoint at least, and even maybe basketball, would have to settle for the two- or three-star recruit that, hey, you know what, we think we can turn them into something. We're going to have to just, you know, work hard and get better, and we don't have as much natural athleticism, but we got to find these diamonds in the rough. That's the same way in baseball. The Royals can't have, Clayton Kershaw on their team or go get Garrett Cole like the Yankees conveniently were able to do this offseason. So the Royals got to find Matt Harvey.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the difference. Now, don't you think that's a pretty big difference? The Yankees can go get Garrett Cole.
Yes.
And the Royals have to settle for getting a Matt Harvey. Now, isn't that a bit of a difference? Now, I'm talking Matt Harvey not back in 2015. I'm talking Matt Harvey's ERA of over 7 last year with the Reds. There's the difference. That's a great example. Now apply that to college sports. You know, can you get two stars that turn out to be better than five stars? Well, I always use the example. Dane Crist was a five-star quarterback out of high school, and he didn't turn out to be much and didn't do well at Kansas after Notre Dame. And you had a two-star in Colin Klein, who was a Heisman Trophy finalist. Yes, those are exceptions to the rule. But many times, your four- or five-star recruits are typically, overall, going to pan out, at least in college. So it's unbelievably – I mean, the big schools already have an unfair advantage. The Power Five schools clearly have a huge advantage. Yeah. More on that in a moment. So now you're going to – it's going to be the Wild West, and there's not going to be any kind of cap on anything. And even if there is a cap on it, why wouldn't Texas just go spend as much as they got to do for the best quarterback in America, which we know quarterback is the most important position in all of football. And if anybody wants to argue with me about that, all you got to do is look at Arrowhead and see what happens when you have the best quarterback in the world. You win Super Bowls. It's that simple.
Yeah.
It really is when you break it down. So imagine Patrick Mahomes is, you know, the cat's meow, number one quarterback coming out right now to be in college. Oh, my Lord. I mean, he would get, and they can pay him? Oh, my goodness. Where does it end? He might make as much in college as he would in the pros. I just don't know how you even set it up. I really don't. I wish somebody had the answers.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of things that go through my mind. Like, if you get paid that much money, then you forfeit your scholarship so other people can have that.
Right.
You know, you pay for your school, okay? Because it's going to be a lot less percentage of what you're getting paid than what you actually, you know, somebody else could use that money. And I don't know if you do that. You know, there's so many things that would be involved in that how do you go about it?
Right.
So good luck, Pac-12 players, with getting that approved.
Exactly. Well, and then I got this. Top five ranked players in NFL were three stars out of high school. Okay. I don't know. I mean, you want to connect the dots for me on that one? Like, pertaining to the conversation we're having?
I guess when you started bringing up stars and how they perform in college and things like that. So, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. But see, here's the thing. You probably want to look a little past the first five. Like, see, this is how it's all convenient.
Well,
people want to fit an agenda, okay? So if somebody wants to argue that four or five stars aren't all that and they want to make an argument that three stars are the cat's meow, what do you know? The top five are three-star recruits out of high school. Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes are two of those, whatever. And that's according to the NFL list of 100, which, by the way, is a flawed list when Mahomes is number four, okay? So I already have a problem with the credibility of the list. So now you want to say, okay, the top five players were three stars. Okay, that's great. How many – tell me of the top 100 NFL players, because that's the list. The top 100 NFL players voted on by the players, not the media. Somebody do this research for me. Of the 100 players in the National Football League, tell me how many were five stars, how many were four stars, how many are three stars, and get back to me. And if you can tell me that there are more three stars than any level of stars rated in recruiting services, if there are more three stars than four or five stars in the top NFL 100, I will be very interested in that. Something tells me that's not the case. Something tells me that three stars aren't the most players out of the top 100. But the top five are three stars, so thus three stars. And it is a good story to say that just because you're not a five-star doesn't mean it's the end of the world. You can be really great. You know, Colin Klein was a two-star, and Jordy Nelson wasn't exactly, you know, he's a walk-on for crying out loud. That worked out pretty good. You know, there's exceptions to rules. But listen, if you play the percentages and you get, and if the recruiting services are right, that's a big if. But if you play the percentages and you give me, listen, you give me 55-star recruits and I give Dusty 54-star recruits and I give Cody 53-star recruits, who are you going to bet's going to have a better season? Who are you going to bet on?
The four-star. The team with the four-star recruits.
The five-star.
Yeah. The five-star. I mean, the five-star recruits, yeah.
I know you're, cocky.
Sorry, I was just looking at a four-star on Lamar Jackson. Yeah, yeah. So.
Okay, so Lamar Jackson was a four-star.
On Rivals.com, he was a four-star.
So what are we going off? Once again. So Lamar Jackson.
Sorry, I had that in
number
my mind.
One guy.
You can go with the five-star recruits if you're wanting to win.
So probably what happened was ESPN threw out something on Twitter. It said the top five NFL players are all three-stars.
And it could have very well
been ESPN's ranking.
And ESPN ranking, yeah.
Whereas Rivals had four of the five guys at four-stars. So there's a flaw.
Mahomes was three on Rivals. Because I looked his up first just to see.
Right.
And
he also didn't start playing football. I mean, he wasn't. Football was his third favorite sport, for crying out loud.
I mean,
in high school.
there's just so much there.
Right. Right.
For him.
But you get my point. And I'm not trying to, you know, make fun of Cody, because I know what Cody's trying to say is, you know, hey, you guys are talking about stars and top five or three stars, which that could be argued based on the recruiting service you want to use. And ESPN, of course, is always going to use their recruiting service because ESPN's always right. But if you give me all five stars and Dusty gets all four stars and Cody gets all three stars, you know what? Maybe Cody can coach him up, and he can be the Bill Snyder of the three stars, and he can beat the five stars. But let me ask you a question. Bill Snyder had all those two and three stars, and he did a great job. Bill Snyder did an unbelievable job. Everybody knows that. One of the greatest coaches of all time. Some people say he could be the greatest college football coach of all time. Well, he didn't win a national championship. Do you know what he inherited and what he dealt with? Okay, but here's the point. Bill Snyder had to do with two and three stars. He might have had an occasional four star. He might have. I don't know how many four star recruits he had.
Not a lot.
Not a lot. So he had mainly two and three star recruits. How many conference championships in Bill Snyder's years of coaching did he win?
He won two.
Two. Okay. And how many years did he coach? 25 years?
27 or 28 okay. is what it ended up.
And there were years where you had the Big Eight. So you had eight schools in your conference. And then you had, of course, 12 and then 10. So he had two conference championships in 27 years. How many conference championships has Oklahoma won in the last 27 years? More than two.
I can't.
Way more. Yeah, way lot. More than
Most
two.
Most of them.
They won what? Four or five in a row, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's my point. Listen, so we can. Bill Snyder's a great coach, unbelievable coach. And he had two and three stars for the most part. Oklahoma has four and five stars. Who's been more successful over the last 30 years? In winning conference championships and making playoffs bursts or being in national championship games.
Nope.
Cody, are you out there? Cody, give me a ring. Cody. Sorry, Cody. He's a K-State fan, so I'm having fun with this. You see the point? Okay, now, can three stars make an NFL? Sure. Two stars can make an NFL. Guys that were walk-ons like Jordy Nelson can make an NFL.
Yeah, Russell.
There's exceptions
Russell
to the rule.
Russell Wilson was the next one I looked up, and he was two stars.
Russell Wilson was a two star.
Yeah, coming out
because
of
because he's too short, not big enough to play.
Exactly.
So forth and so on.
All the knocks that you usually get there.
Right. So there's guys that obviously make the league that are two stars or three stars or can still get better once they get to the pros. They can actually they elevate their game or get bigger, stronger, or who knows what happens. I mean, we, you know, we see college players all the time have better pro careers than they did in college. Like Paul Pierce, he had a great college career, but he was much even better in the pros. Pros better fit for what he wanted to do and how he played. Same thing can apply in the NFL. You get the right system. You're in a college system that didn't really fit your strengths, but now you go to a pro system, and all of a sudden, I mean, Patrick Mahomes wasn't a Heisman Trophy winner, was he, in college? No. But now he's the MVP of the NFL. Why is that? Well, he's probably got better coaching. He's got better weapons. He's got more five-star recruits, four or five stars at play on his team, and so forth and so on. So when I go back to Bill Snyder is an unbelievable coach, and I've heard this argument before. Well, if Bob Stoops would have had Bill Snyder's players and Bill Snyder had Bob Stoops' players, what would have happened? I would tell you probably the same thing. I think the results would have been very similar and maybe have been a little bit better for Bill Snyder. I don't know for sure because now you're sitting here trying to say who's a better coach, Bob Stoops or Bill Snyder. But it is a fair thing to bring up. You know, would Bob Stoops had the success that he had with two- and three-star recruits? Of course not. Would Bill Snyder had more success and won more conference championships with four- and five-star recruits? Absolutely. Without a doubt in my mind, don't you think?
The only thing about a lot of people had this discussion when Mack Brown was at Texas because he only won one national championship, right? And should have been up there, like, with the talent and people that come in there, should have just been there in the discussion every year.
Yes.
No doubts about it.
Right.
A lot of that came up, and I'm sitting here thinking, like, I agree to a point that where Bill Snyder would have probably more success than Mack Brown down in Texas.
I would agree with that.
But my question is, how do those four or five-star guys respond to Bill Snyder's
exactly.
coaching?
Exactly.
Because a lot of those guys are prima donnas. Let's be completely
honest
about
this. They've always been pampered and told they're unbelievable.
They've always been the best.
They're not as coachable.
So, exactly. And I think
that's what makes Bob Stoops and what Lincoln Riley does pretty impressive.
Yeah. And I think there's a reason why two, three-star guys in Manhattan can come up and years and year after year for a while at least be in the discussion of trying to compete for national championships and definitely conference championships,
right,
is because they had a coach that knew how to work with that, mm-hmm, and knew how to coach them up and get them better. Mm-hmm. And I think to an extent you would see that with the 4- and 5-star guys if Bill Snyder was at Texas or Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. But I think there'd be an issue a little bit with some of those kids reacting and how they would respond and take his style.
Mm-hmm.
That is not going to be the same as Bob Stoops.
It's
not going to be the same as Mac Brown. Mac Brown's probably a little closer than Bob Stoops, mm-hmm, as far as style to Bill Snyder, but they're not going to be the same. And I think that's going to be just as much of an issue on this side of trying, mm-hmm, to coach these guys, not having to coach these guys up as far as talent level, but as far as keeping them level and level-headed, mm-hmm, and not get too big and then try to bring them down a peg or two, and how do they react to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've heard stories of how some of those practices go at K-State, and I'm like, I don't know if them 4- or 5-star guys can handle that.
Yeah. Now, with Nick Saban,
they could.
Nick Saban can flash his rings and go, I've won national championships, whereas Bill Snyder couldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, and plus Bill Snyder was an older guy.
And he can later on.
You know, more of a grandpa figure. Mm-hmm. I mean, not to disrespect Bill Snyder, but that's how he lasted 20, 15 years. That's what it was. Yeah, it's a good point. And that's why I think sometimes coaches don't get enough credit. Bill Self, I think, sometimes doesn't get enough credit. I think Lincoln Riley sometimes doesn't get, Nick Saban even. Like, oh, well, it must be nice. You got all the greatest, most talented players. And yes, does it make it easier? Yeah, but there are challenges. When you got to get a whole bunch of guys that were clearly the best at whatever they did and number one recruit out of all these states, and then they come in and now you're coaching them hard. You're trying to get them to work together as one unit. That's why Nick Saban's worth $8 million.
Yes.
That's why Bill Self's worth $3.5 million, because they can get the talent and then they can make them coexist. And Bill Snyder, why he was so good was he would make players better and would build from 2- and 3-stars to where, you know, if you re-rank some of these guys when they left and went to the pros or got out of college, which I think would be fun if you re-ranked these kids, you would see where the improvement came. Of course, in fairness, if you're a 5-star, there's nowhere to go but down.
Yeah.
When it comes to the rankings, could hurt you from that standpoint. But at the end of the day, it's just like anything else. I mean, if you're looking at sports and you're looking at, you know, is it a fair fight when the Royals play the Yankees right now? No.
No.
Is it a fair fight when K-State plays Oklahoma? Well, last year, K-State beat Oklahoma. That can happen. All right, that can happen. In a one-game situation, that can certainly happen. K-State won last year, and it was an impressive win. If they play a best 4 out of 7 series, I don't think K-State wins 4 out of 7. I don't think there's any K-State fan out there that will tell you that. Okay? So you're going to play the odds, and I'm going to go with talent. And Bob Huggins has said this before. It's not the X's and O's, but the Jimmy and the Joes. And you've heard this from other coaches as well. It's about getting talent. I mean, I don't think John Calipari is an unbelievable coach, but he's unbelievable at getting unbelievable talent. Whether they're cheating and paying, I don't know. But that's a guy that can get a tremendous amount of talent together. They'll play together, and they'll have a lot of success. Now, maybe they don't win as many titles as people want him to. But you have to get the talent in order to be really, really good. And if you don't get the talent, then you got to be a tremendous coach and coach him up. And if you talk to really almost any coaches, they would tell you in a heartbeat, give me the talent first. Give me the 5-star first. Well, all you got to do is look at the one-and-done player. Most coaches will say, yeah, I'm only going 1 year. I'll take him.
Oh, yeah.
I'll take him. Why? You can get these other guys that will be in your program 3 or 4 years that are a star rated below the superstar that you're talking about for a one and done. Why would you deal with the one and done who might skip class? And because one, if he's great, he's one and done, he's going to bring a lot of fanfare to my program, going to help my program make money in merchandise sales, even though his name isn't on the back. And that goes back to what the players are saying. Wait a minute. I'm a superstar player. I went to Kansas or Alabama, wherever. My number's on the back, but my name isn't there. We know you're making money off me, my likeness and everything else. You're going to take the talent. You're going to take... Bill Snyder was given the choice. Trust me on this. If Bill Snyder was given the choice, you can pick all this talent. Here's your 5-stars. Here's your 4-stars. Here's your 3-stars. And you get to pick 20 players out of these three groups. I've got 20 players of 5-stars in front of me. I got 24s and 23s. And you can pick total of 20 out of these group of 60 players. Do you think he's going to pick more out of the 3-star group? Hell no. He's going to pick, he might not pick all 20 out of the 5-star group. He might not.
Yeah.
But I'll bet you he picks at least 15. And you might pick one here in the four-star. You know, I think he's really more of a five. I disagree with that rating service.
Oh, well, yeah.
And that three-star kid's going to be the perfect kid to be in my system. But he ain't going to grab all the three stars. So if coaches have their choice of who they're going to grab, who are they going to grab? The talent! The talent! The reason K-State didn't do that is because they couldn't.
Yeah, they don't have that luxury.
And that goes back to what we're talking about. It's already an unequal playing field. Can you beat them once in a while like K-State beat Oklahoma? Yes, you can. But in the long scheme of things, over year after year after year, who's going to win out?
Oklahoma, Alabama, in this Oklahoma. Situation that we're talking about with right. Oklahoma, K-State, and Alabama
right.
nationally.
Right.
That it's just, it's proven.
Why do you think Vanderbilt always sucks? You got Vanderbilt, you got Ole Miss has it once in a blue moon. They're like small market baseball teams. You've got that window. You got that window where you got a stud quarterback, and that can change your team. You know, Auburn, they've had their ebbs and flows, haven't they?
Oh, yeah.
When they've had a great quarterback like Cam Newton, all of a sudden they shoot
When they
up.
Paid Cam Newton, they got all this. What I was talking about earlier.
Right, exactly. It was a good investment. It was a great investment, you know? And Jameis Winston at Florida State, great investment.
Yes.
Okay? And that makes a world of difference. And so now you already have an unfair playing field. Now you want to pay players, and all the players now, the Pac-12 players, want to get paid 50% revenue of the revenue. How are you distributing that money? And who do you think is going to get the most money if there's no cap? The quarterback's going to get the most money, just like yeah, Patrick Mahomes gets the most money.
Yeah.
It'll happen in college. It'll be the exact same thing, except it's just at a different level. Am I wrong?
No.
If there's no rules and no cap, it's just going to be a professional sports league. Is that what we want?
Not what I want.
That's not really what I want.
We already have one of those, and when people try to do them again, they fail. Do we want college football to fail?
I don't. Power 5 and NCAA are now officially adversaries. Here we go. All ties to the money we just talked about. A breakaway may be only a matter of time. So we sit here and talk about the NCAA. Well, how's the NCAA? They can't even control things as they got. Well, what happens at the Power 5, all 65 of the Power 5 schools? That's the five main conferences, including the Big 12. Yes, they're still considered a Power 5, although lately I'm starting to wonder. What happens if they break off? Who's gonna govern the Power 5?
Yeah.
The SEC commissioner? Who's in charge of saying, okay, hold on a second. Alabama, you've spent too much money on recruits if you got pay for play. So now you've got less members to worry about because you just got 65. But there's talk that the Power 5, if they don't get what they want from the NCAA, there is talk, although I don't think it's too serious right now. But I think eventually you're going to get to this. It's been on the radar for a while, that the Power 5 could just do their own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They could do their own football championship season. They don't, right now, the NCAA doesn't sanction the playoff anyway. That's not part of the NCAA. People don't realize that. You've explained that before on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And so, now granted, the other sports, there's some issues. But if they just want to focus on football, which why wouldn't you focus on just that one? Because it's 80% of your athletic budget, and you want to keep afloat. Then if the NCAA says, well, you know what, we can't do it, there's no sports, we can't do these sports, and we're not going to do football, so it's a blanket statement, the Power 5 very, very well could try to have their own football season, crown their own champion, and do it all on their own without the NCAA, and in essence break off from the NCAA. Now, one of the problems with that now is it's going to look pretty bad if you're just having football and you're putting all these players at risk. That would look bad by whoever is putting this together, whether it's the NCAA allowing it or the SEC being the leader of the Power 5 and doing that. And who, but, like, how do you vote who's in power of the Power 5?
You got to have a board.
Representing all the conferences.
Five-person board and then somebody maybe from the outside that would be a tie. There's no tiebreaker vote, I guess. So to have a five-person board.
Right.
I would say.
I would hope so.
I mean, you can't have... If you do it like that, like...
Are you going to have a commissioner?
Greg Sankey can't just be like, I'm going to take over this thing, and we're going to roll with it. Just because we win the most championships, because we're put in a better situation
Whatever conference has the most money gets to go ahead and elect the president of the new found football league of the Power 5. I anoint myself, Greg Sankey. Bob Bowlesby, you're fifth in command?
Absolutely.
Oh, that leaves...
You don't get a vote.
No, you don't, Bob. And if he did, he wouldn't know which way to vote. The Big 12's a joke. I know you talked about this Friday, I'm sure. I might have stronger words for it. So this is what's happening with college football, if you don't know. The Big 10, no non-cons. But that, I will say this. The Big 10 has not set their schedule yet. But they do know that they're doing no non-cons. So they at least have some kind of plan. They were the first conference, which was the proactive conference. Then the Pac-12 followed that lead. Now the Pac-12 has followed another lead. And that was after the SEC followed the ACC lead. Are you confused? The ACC, really, the Big 10 started all this when they said no non-con games. And then the Pac-12 followed that and said, okay, we're not going to do non-cons either. The other three conferences, the ACC, the SEC, the Big 12, said we're going to wait this out. The ACC really surprised some people, although I think the SEC had better connections and were prepared, obviously, much more than the Big 12 was. Shocker. The ACC decided to do 10 league games, one non-con, but that one non-con's got to be at home. So KU hosting Boston College.
In the home state.
In the home state.
Which I talked a little bit about on Friday, why that's important.
Right. So Kansas has got to either give up that game or have to decide we'll go there to salvage that non-con game or find a different opponent, which good luck with that, because you already had to find Southern Illinois to play week one. So the ACC made that choice. So it's 10 league games, one non-con, which has to be in the home state, plus the ACC title game. The SEC then followed suit. For once, they were kind of reactive, although they had a plan in place ready to go the day after. 10 league games, and their difference was they were going to delay until September 26th. So then the Pac-12, well, okay, we copied the Big 10 on going to 10 to no non-cons, but then the Pac-12 said we adding a game. So now the Pac-12 is doing 10 league games, just like the ACC, but no non-cons.
Mm-hmm.
But then copied the SEC in regards to delaying until September 26th. So the Pac-12 copied portions of other conferences. First of all, they copied the Big 10 to start with.
Yeah.
Then they copied the ACC part of theirs. And then the last part, they copied the SEC. Well, at least you have a plan, Pac-12. It's a combination of everybody else's plan. Cool. What's the Big 12's plan, Dusty? Tell me.
Nothing. Let's just go on August 29th. Right now, we don't have a plan.
You're going to cancel our virtual media day, which we sent out a deal 24 hours ago about how you can access the Zoom call for it. Whoa, wait a minute. Whoa, the SEC is doing what the ACC is doing. They're going to 10 league games. Whoa, I didn't see that coming. You didn't? ESPN and CBS Sports had it on the front page. So we're going to cancel the media day because we kind of figured it'd be a good idea if we had our schedule figured out. Well, you didn't have it figured out before then anyway, so why did you still have it scheduled for media day on August 3rd, which was supposed to be today? You can just see the questions now. So, Coach, whenever you play and whenever and whoever you play, what do you think about whoever or whatever or whenever you're going to play? Been a great, great media day. Wouldn't it have been awesome? So, Coach, we don't really know who you're going to play on what day. We know that you're going to play Southern Illinois on August 29th, we think. But we really don't know. What about your other games? What about the Boston College game? No comment. Can you imagine Les Miles trying to answer those questions? So, Les has problems answering regular questions.
Yeah.
So, the Big 12 is just, once again, flounders. It's the runt of the litter. The Big 12 is just hanging on the coattails of all the rest of the conferences, and give the ACC credit. They didn't wait for the SEC. They said, you know what? We got a plan. We're going to do it. The Big 10 did their own plan at that time back, early July. So I applaud them. It just bothers me when you're constantly reactive. You're not setting the tone. You're always on your heels. And we talk about this when we play sports, and I think it's true in life too. If you're always on your heels and you're never aggressive and you're timid, you're going to get run over. I'm going to tell you right now, if you go in the real world and you're vying for a job and you're timid, you don't follow up with phone calls, you don't call asking if there's a job opening, you don't send in your resume, or you do, but then you don't follow up with a phone call to see if somebody got your resume. If you send your portfolio in, or you don't ask for an interview, and people do ask for an interview, guess what? They're going to have an advantage.
Yes.
You got to be aggressive. You got to be confident, but you got to be aggressive. You got to be proactive, usually, unless you're, inheriting something like some people I know. Some people didn't have to start their own business. Mommy and daddy hand it to them. Okay, fine. You've got your own business. Now you got to run it. We'll see if it works, and maybe it will. But some people had to start from scratch. Other people do inherit things. But for those that are fighting for job openings out there, those that are aggressive and proactive are much more likely to get the job than somebody that isn't. So that applies not only in life, but it also applies when it comes to football and running a conference. And the Big 12, once again, doesn't get it. They didn't see the shuffling of the decks and lost Nebraska and Colorado and Missouri. They could have been proactive and had it sitting in their lap to add Louisville to this league and decided, nah, we're good, which was really dumb. And then, well, you know, there's more money to go around. We got less mouths to feed. That, you know, that 10-school thing works out good. Yeah, great. And you're named the Big 12. Okay, good. 10 schools in the Big 12 makes sense, yeah. You know, we're going to do this round-robin thing, and we're going to declare one true champion. Oh, okay, that sounds really good. We'll run all these promos. One true champion. We're the only league that plays everybody in football. It's a round-robin to decide one true champion. And then all of a sudden, you have a two-way tie. Well, now what do you do? Hey, we got Baylor and TCU. Was Beebe the commissioner at the time? Or was that Bowlesby?
I'm pretty sure Beebe was there.
Commissioner Beebe, we're having a hard time deciding who gets this fourth slot in the playoff. All we need you to do is tell us who's your true champion. Well, you know, we really have two. But your media campaign says one true champion. Yeah, about that. We weren't really thinking it through. We never even thought about two teams tying for first. My bad. Just recognize them as co-champs. We're giving them a big trophy, both of them.
Bowlesby was there already. Yeah.
But Commissioner,
same story.
Commissioner Bowlesby, we only have one spot available. You have to pick one. No, we really can't. So you're telling me you ran a media campaign about declaring one true champion because that's what's so great about your football league compared to us and the SEC and the ACC and the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. So that's what makes you unique. And now when I ask you who's your representative, who's your true champion so we can consider them for the one spot that's available between Ohio State of the Big Ten, who has a clear champion, and we've got this situation here between Baylor and TCU. You can't tell me? Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm telling you. And now you're all mad because you get locked out. Oh, wait a minute. We got an out-of-conference title game now. Baylor and TCU. I couldn't pick one, so now we got to add that conference title game because another data point. So we went without one because the one true champion is the way to go, but now we really need that. Well, that means somebody's got to play somebody twice. Yeah.
So now our one true champion has to beat this team twice to be the one true champion.
Right.
If it works out that way.
Because there's only one Big 12 conference with just 10 teams, and that would be the Big 12. So now you've known this COVID-19 stuff's going on. You know that the conferences are shuffling the deck. And here's what happens at the end of the shuffling of the cards, and they're all handed out. And it's like if you play pitch, you get so many cards, or you play poker, you get so many cards, right? And then all of a sudden, you get to the Big 12, and like, oh, short a card. Huh. I could have swore it was a 52-card deck, wasn't it? Why is the Big 12 short a card? Oh, well. And that's what the Big 12 is. Always short a card in a hand of poker.
Always.
They're always. It's been that way for a long time. And I hear people that want to support the Big 12. I hear people from K-State, KU, some Oklahoma, Texas, I don't think so. Well, Texas will, because they think the Big 12 caters to Texas, and that's why Nebraska got out.
Texas should have any beef with the Big 12. They run it.
I hear K-State and KU people taking shots at Nebraska. I see K-State, KU people taking shots at Missouri because they left. Oh, you haven't won nothing in the SEC, have you, Missouri? Or, oh, Nebraska, you're still not any good up there. You know what? I'm pretty doggone sure Missouri and Nebraska are very happy where they are. You know why? They might have their problems. Don't get me wrong. The Nebraska's football is not what it once was. It hasn't been for a while. Would they be better in the Big 12? Probably, in regards to success. Missouri, would they be probably better success-wise in the Big 12? Yes, that's probably true. Colorado, maybe. Don't know. But here's the thing that they have that the Big 12 doesn't have. The Big 10 has solid leadership. The SEC has solid leadership. Those two conferences have visions, and those conferences are stable. And they're not afraid to go poach and grab somebody from a weaker conference.
No.
Whereas the Big 12, when somebody's sitting in their lap like Louisville, we're going to pass. The Big 12 is fifth. And this is just another example. And the Big 12, I think, just holding on for dear life that they're still part of the Big 5 when this ever does happen, that the Power 5 break off from the NCAA. Or the Big 12 is going to be gobbled up and you're going to have the Power 4 instead of the Power 5. And I'm starting to get to the point where I don't even know if the Big 12 is a Power 5. I mean, it is, but it's the weakest of the Power 5, so it's Power 4 plus 1?
I say, Oklahoma and Texas didn't exist, they definitely wouldn't be in it.
And as we always say in the Big 12, Texas, Oklahoma hold the cards.
Oh, yeah.
And if one of those bolts and gets tired of this, not knowing what we're doing and... Hey, we're going to play 12 games, so that'll be unique compared to everybody else. But our three extra games are against Howard, Southern Illinois, and Coastal Carolina. Whew, sign me up. Ball State, Buffalo. Those are the games they're going to play.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the games you're going to get. East Tennessee State, Middle Tennessee State. Ooh, wow. Where do I sign up for pay-per-view on those?
Yeah.
I just, the leadership, I thought Bowlesby was obviously an improvement, which probably is
it
compared
didn't
to
take
what
much.
BB was.
Yeah.
But I thought Bowlesby would be a better commissioner than he has been. And I don't think the Big 12 has changed that much in regards to, obviously, they're on their heels. They're reactive instead of proactive.
Yeah, and I think Bowlesby gets a little bit of a free pass because he hasn't lost any teams yet.
Yeah.
Which
yet.
Is sad.
Keywords, yet. Wait till 2025. I think that's when the TV deals run out.
It's very sad that that's how you're going to be judged because Dan Beebe just really botched everything about it at that point.
Oh, so
and
bad.
So... That's how he's judged. Haven't lost any teams yet.
Yet. Keyword, yet. What's the Big 12 going to do? Your guess is as good as mine and Dusty's. Are they going to do three-week non-con games and play nine league games? Are they going to play an extra league game, which means somebody's going to play twice and then there'll be a Big 12 title game? Are they going to go to just nine games and play? I mean, right now they're planning on obviously still having their games on August 29th. KU plays, Oklahoma plays that day. I can't tell you what their vision is. I have no idea what their plan is. And you know what's really sad? I don't think the Big 12 knows what they want to do. They're left holding the bag again.
And there's no reason to wait right now. You, like I said on Friday, you hold all the rest of the cards in this deal. Like, you tell, like I was using K-State as an example, you tell Buffalo and North Dakota they can't come. That's it. That you're... There's no, you don't have to worry about what any other Power 5 conference thinks about you saying we're not going to play non-con games because this doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They've already taken care of it for you.
Right.
Like, there's no, you hold all the cards now for the non-conference for those smaller schools.
Right.
You can tell them, yes, come. You can tell them, don't come. Just tell me something. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah,
are you going to sit here and wait? Like you said, I mean, August 29th, this is 26 days away.
Yes.
The KU's supposed to play their first game.
Less than 4 weeks.
Right now on the schedule.
Right. And Oklahoma plays that day too.
Yeah. And it's like, just tell them. Just say Southern Illinois, nah, you can't come. It's just not going to happen. We wanted it to, but it's not going to. It's not hard to tell them they can't come. And now you might have to compensate them because a lot of those schools.
But why? Why do they? I guess my question is, why do they need to not come?
Well, I mean, if the Big 12 wants to back things up, what I'm saying is they hold the power. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm saying. There's nobody that's going to be all up in arms if Big 12 decides to cancel their non-conference schedule like everybody else.
No.
Is what I was saying Friday, and it's what I'm saying today.
Right.
They hold the cards. They can say, there's not going to be a big financial impact here for the whole of college football by the Big 12 now saying that we're going to cancel our non-conference schedule.
Right.
Which I don't know why they haven't just done that now. Their issue is they don't have enough for 10 conference games, and I think that's why they're just puzzled right now of what they want to do.
Because they're left
everybody else
back.
Can play 10 conference games. How do we get that extra data point? Basically is what they're probably going through again right now.
You know, if they had Louisville, that would have been solved.
Louisville, you know.
They've been Louisville.
Any teams that they
Cincinnati, Louisville.
Out in the past. Yes.
Had those two. NFL players opting out. Patriots have 8 players now. The 53 have opted out. Of course, we talked Damian Williams last week. He's one of 2 Chiefs players opted out. I think you're going to see more NFL players opting out as we get closer to time. They're talking about moving up that deadline to, is it tomorrow or Wednesday, about opting out? NFL players got to decide. That's what I read the other day.
Yeah.
They're going to move it up. which when you got 8 of your 53-man roster of the Patriots opting out, you kind of need to shut it down quickly. So
yeah.
Where everybody's going to opt out. The other thing, too, is NFL quarterbacks are on the COVID list. That doesn't mean they have COVID, but it means they're either close contact or had COVID or have COVID. Matthew Stafford, quarterback of the Lions, and Gardner Minshew, quarterback of the Jaguars, are both on that list. So we've now here we go. Here goes COVID affecting NFL, which we knew was coming.
Yeah.
The NBA's back. No positives I know of that's messed up the NBA,
no.
Like baseball. The whole Black Lives Matter movement on the court and kneeling and this and that. And then there's a few that stand during the anthem, and some people get vilified for that. That's how weird is that? After it vilified people for kneeling, now we're vilifying people for standing. It's all messed up. I don't want to get into it. The bottom line to me, this is I'll make it as simple as I can, very short. If you choose to stand during the national anthem, that's your right. And if you choose to kneel during the national anthem, that's your right. Does it bother me one way or the other? Yeah, maybe it does, but I have to get over it. That's your choice. It's your body. You can do what you want. It's your decision. You have your own mind. You're not doing anything illegal. If the league allows you to stand or lay down or kneel or bow or, you know, cross-legged Indian style, if they allow you to do whatever you want to do, turn your back, whatever. If you're allowed to do whatever you want to do during the anthem, why am I to yell at you because you did what you did?
Yeah.
Because if I was out there on the court, I'd have the right to choose which way I want to honor the flag. And by the way, a lot of this stuff's happening before the anthem, by the way. I want to make that clear. A lot of people are confused that they think it's all happening during the anthem. It's not. It's happening before the anthem, and then the anthem has usually been handled pretty well. But it is a form of, obviously, solidarity, unification, this and that. But there are a few players that have said, listen, I'm going to stand. Now, in some cases, the anthem is being happening during the anthem.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to confuse the issue too much. And in golf, there's a new number one, Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas, your new number one in golf, as he won by 3 strokes over Brooks Koepka over the weekend. And now the first major of golf's coming up with no fans. And that'll be the PGA coming up this week. So we at least have some big, huge event when it comes to sports. And then the NBA playoffs here very soon. And we'll see how it all turns out. But so far, the NBA, the NHL, underway now with some qualifier things.
Yeah,
best out of 5 qualifying rounds.
Yeah, and there's too much to talk about to try to decipher it all.
Yeah.
It's NHL.com's your best bet.
Okay, nice.
Because they are the top 4 seeds are playing a round robin just to get where they're going to be seeding-wise. And then 5 through 12 seeds are all – there's 3 different qualifying tournaments there for there are 4 different qualifying tournaments in each conference.
And they got 2 hubs, one for the East and one for the West.
Yeah.
So the NHL bubble's doing fine. The MLS bubble's doing fine. Sporting KC lost in the quarterfinals, by the way, if you missed that. 3-1, they're eliminated. The NBA bubble's doing fine. But anything outside of a bubble, not so much, which would be Major League Baseball. Now, NASCAR's doing okay, as far as we know. Golf has had positive tests, but individual sports, so that's not as big of an issue. Tennis, we've seen the world's number one on the women's side withdraw from the U.S. Open coming up, Labor Day weekend or late August?
Yeah.
Or did they move that? I don't know.
I think it moved back
okay,
a little bit.
Okay, but she's not going to play. So in regards to what's happening in sports right now, the most successful, I would say right now, if MLS is not as popular as the major ones, but they've had really no issues. But the NBA is probably the perfect guinea pig that they're looking at here with this bubble. And so far, it's going very well.
It's surprising me how well it is going so far. You know, knock on wood, obviously.
But all it's going to take is a couple positive tests to blow that out of the water. And Major League Baseball has got Cardinal players, COVID, Marlins finally going to go back to play. Who's going to be on the team? I don't know. I tried out. They didn't take me. couldn't hit the fastball or the curveball or the changeup, which is kind of important when you play baseball. So we will continue to let it all play out. All I know is I really hope the Big 12 makes a decision before the season starts as to what they're going to do.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.